Oké, kijk, daar zijn we. Goedemorgen iedereen. Ik leg de nadruk op goedemorgen. Je ziet het ook aan de opkomst in de zaal, denk ik, dat het nog vrij vroeg is. Dat is altijd een van de tekenen dat je een soort middle-class speaker bent. Het gaat zo, als je begint te spreken op conferenties, dan meestal zet je ergens achterin naast een grote naam, zodat al het volk naar de grote naam komt. Kijk naar de agenda hier op TechDays. Einde van morgen is Bart de Smet. Iedereen gaat naar Bart de Smet. Iedereen die ernaast staat, sorry, daar gaat niemand naartoe gaan. Dan heb je de middle-class speakers, waartoe ik mezelf dan durf te rekenen. Die komen altijd 's morgens vroeg op de eerste dag. En die mogen het publiek een beetje opwarmen, proberen de mensen enthousiast te krijgen over het komen naar sessies. Nu goed, ik geloof dat de sessie in het Engels normaal gezien ging zijn, dus ik weet niet, zijn er mensen die liever in Engels horen? Oké, so let's switch to English. Sorry, no problem. I just start, because it's early and I just start speaking in Dutch, so then again, it's early today. So, with my story on being a middle-class speaker, I would like some good evaluations at the end, so I can be one of those last-day speakers again, so I can get my sleep on the first day of a conference, and I don't have to be here at 7:45, even though I like being here, but 7:45 is sort of early to start the day. Cool. So the talk of today is going to be about reducing latency on the web with the Windows Azure CDN. And I'm still saying Windows Azure CDN. If you hear me talk about the Azure database on Windows Azure, you will also hear me talk about SQL Azure, even though the name has changed two or three times between the time that was the official name and now. I will probably keep mixing Windows Azure and Microsoft Azure and just Azure for the next coming years. So with that, it's the Azure CDN right now. The purpose of this talk is actually to get you acquainted with why we want to use a CDN, that's the first thing, and how we can make use of the CDN that is currently available in the Azure platform. And I think everyone is building web applications, I assume, or doing something that has to transfer something over HTTP. Yeah, okay. So the thing there is, we all serve HTTP traffic from our web servers. But a lot of that, and really if you look at your IIS logs, for example, you will see that quite a lot of that content is actually static content. And that static content is coming from your server, which is also producing dynamic content, which depends on the database connection, on the user that is logged in, on cookies, on sessions, and so on. So why are we mixing those two types of traffic on one machine? Because static content also does give some I/O and CPU overhead on the server. Not too much, but if you have a very busy website, it will be a busy web server with handling that sort of traffic as well. Another thing is, since it's static content, why are you hosting this from your one server, which may be very far away from one specific user in the globe? Why not move the content closer to the user so its perceived load speed of your web page will be much faster? And that's what this talk is going to be about. Just to give you a quick introduction, I'm Maarten Baljouw. I drove from Antwerp, Belgium yesterday, so a one-hour drive approximately, ignoring the speed traps in the Netherlands. I'm a technical evangelist at JetBrains, so if you have questions about JetBrains products, we have a booth there, so please feel free to go there. But my big passion is really Windows Azure, and I should say Azure there again. I'm an MVP in that. I try to blog about those things. I try to tweet about that as well. I also tweet about empty rooms at 7:30 in the morning, but I'm really happy there's actually people in the room, so thank you for coming. And I also write books, and this is the third one, Pro Nougat, if you're interested in that one. I have three copies in my backpack. If you're fast, you can get one of those copies. If not, buy it on Amazon. It will be my last book, which is the same thing I said right after my first book, because writing books is a tedious, tedious job, and I'm not going to do that again this year. So the agenda. We'll start with why you want to use a CDN, and that's actually an interesting part, I think, even though it's sort of a heavy part at this time of day. We're going to look at TCP slow start, we are going to look at latencies, we are going to look at speed of light, fiber optics, and so on. So that's why you want to use a CDN, but we'll see how it relates to a CDN in a minute. Then we'll look at the Azure CDN, what you can do with it, what you cannot do with it currently, and how you can make use of the Azure CDN with either your blob storage account as a content origin or your cloud service as a content origin. Even in the agenda, can I run Azure CDN on top of my websites? Well, if you're running on Azure websites, currently no. So only blob containers and cloud services there. Then you would think, since I started the talk with saying that CDNs are for static content and so on, you would think it's a bad idea to host dynamic content on the CDN. Well, the fun thing is you can actually do that on the Azure CDN. Although dynamic is not as dynamic as every page load is a different, yields different content, but still semi-dynamic content can be served over the CDN as well, and we'll see that as well. So let's start with why we would want to use a CDN. And I will explain what the Azure CDN is and so on. So ignore the term CDN for now. I'm just going to look at some problems the internet has currently. One of the problems the internet has are browsers. You could make some funny jokes about IE versus Chrome and Firefox and so on, but the big problem of the internet are browsers and HTML. Why? Because whenever you make a request to a web page, you get served some HTML. That HTML contains hyperlinks. By the way, HTTP and HTML are the perfect example of a truly RESTful API because they have hypermedia links to other locations and so on. But that's also a downside because the browser will follow all the links that are in that document. So if you have CSS reference from that HTML document, your browser will fetch that CSS from the server. If there's images in there, it will fetch the images from the server. If the CSS contains links to other CSS, it will download those other CSS files. If there's images in there, it will download those images, and so on, and so on, and so on. So there's a lot of stuff being downloaded from your server. And then you have the Google Analytics that are in there, and I don't know, a lot of really big sites always have these very annoying pop-ups saying that you can join a survey and win, I don't know, peanuts. I hate those things, but those scripts are being loaded as well, and the HTML, and the CSS, and the JavaScript for that as well. Anyone having user voice on their website? I do on my website. That's another JavaScript, more CSS, more HTML. So there's a number of files being downloaded for every page you are viewing on the internet. And depending on the server configuration, if the server is not telling your browser that it can cache that content, it will fetch that content on every request. So that's really... it can get slow. The average page, if you don't have anything in cache and people are not using the JavaScript files from the ASP.NET CDN or from the Google CDN, on average, I see a lot of websites are like 200 kilobytes in content just for loading one page, which is crazy. But anyway, those 200 kilobytes, fortunately, are spread across multiple resources, multiple CSS files, multiple JavaScript, and so on. But that is also a problem. Because your browser only supports a finite number of concurrent requests per host name. So if you are serving all this content from your website, your browser will download those files in parallel up to a certain degree, and then once one download finishes, it will download the next CSS file and the next JavaScript file and so on. So there's a number of concurrent connections the browser can handle to one host. On top of that, there's also a number of connections that the browser can handle in total. I have a nice table on the next slide where we can see that some browsers are really insane if it comes to number of connections that are available. And just a quick sneak peek, IE9 Mobile is the best browser ever. You will see that in the table. But anyway, this finite number of connections, some of you, and I'm doing this as well, are solving this issue by bundling all the JavaScript into one big-ass JavaScript file and have all the JavaScripts in there so you only have to load one file. Perfect. Same with CSS. All the CSS, compress it into one file, remove all the white space that is not meaningful to the browser, reduce the file size, and so on. Awesome. But still, there's quite a lot of content that's still being downloaded if you do all that. Another thing a lot of us are doing is already using multiple hosts to serve up content. And that's a perfect workaround, and that's actually also one of the workarounds that the CDN is by simply breaking that number of concurrent connections per host and just using multiple hosts and making use of all the connections that are available in the browser. But if you look at this table, it's quite interesting. Chrome, for example, only supports 6 concurrent requests to one single hostname and a maximum number of connections of 10. I find this pretty scary, to be honest. And why do I find this pretty scary? If I open, how many tabs do you open if you are browsing the internet during the day? 1 or 2 tabs, 10, 20, a lot of tabs, right? A lot of those tabs are also doing AJAX requests in the back. So basically, this table sort of means that the more tabs you open, the slower your experience will get, because if there's a number of connections active, yeah, the browser will have to wait for those. And as you can see, IE Mobile 9, even though the number of connections per host is not that much, the number of maximum connections it can do is awesome. So I really want IE Mobile 9 on my laptop. No, just kidding there. No, let's not go there. But there's a number of differences, but in general, the number of connections per host is pretty low. And if we take Chrome, for example, and you would say, yes, I'm bundling, yes, I'm minifying, and my website is completely optimized, let's look at Twitter. If we open Twitter in our browser, and we would only have 6 concurrent connections available in the browser, if you look, they are making use of a CDN to capture content from their CDN, JavaScript, CSS, and so on. That's more than 6 requests. So this Twitter page you are viewing, even though it's the home page, even though it's the landing page in Chrome, it is being blocked and being chunked to fetch all the files required to render this page. So that's crazy, in my opinion. So browsers are broken, really broken. Then another thing which is broken on the internet is speed of light. Speed of light is pretty fast, you would say, right? So if we take, for example, the distance between US East Coast and US West Coast, that's about 7,400 kilometers. If you travel that by speed of light, it will take you 25 milliseconds around that thing. Now, if you put that light into fiber optics, you have an issue, because fiber optics are not a vacuum, and speed of light is only valid inside of a vacuum. So if you are in glass, which most fiber optics are made of, you will have the refraction index of 1.5, and your speed of light will be reduced. You will only have like 37 milliseconds to transfer from East Coast to West Coast. And that is just if we had one long cable from East Coast to West Coast. There's routers, there's switches, there's other network, there's NSA. There's a lot of stuff in between that cable. So that latency of 37 milliseconds will go up, right? So probably in reality, you will end up with like 50 milliseconds or something with all those devices in between. Now, TCP/IP is an awesome protocol because it was invented quite a while ago, and it's still very alive and kicking. But it also has a couple of downsides. It is a reliable connection, meaning if I get data from a server, my TCP traffic has to go twice back and forth between the server and my clients. Why is that? Well, the first request will be the actual content, and the second request will be the acknowledgement of the fact that I received that content. So this, in effect, means if we forget all the switches and routers, if we have those 37 milliseconds of fiber optics, that our speed will be divided by 2. We will end up with 90 milliseconds because of TCP/IP, because of the fact that we have to do this double round trip. Then, fortunately, TCP has a theoretical maximum throughput of 64 kilobytes per packet, which means, ideally, if my website is 64 kilobytes and I have one resource of 64 kilobytes or less, it would fit inside one TCP packet, right? Problem is, most of the devices, most of the servers, most of the switches, most of the routers are standardized on something around 1,500 bytes as a transfer unit, which means that those 64 kilobytes will be divided into packets of 1,500 bytes. Why is that? Well, again, if you have to download 64 kilobytes, it will take you a bit longer because of the fact that it has to transfer 64 kilobytes. And if you transfer smaller chunks, they can travel over multiple paths on the internet, they can end up in different caches on all the devices in between, and it will appear to be faster. So it's actually a good thing that this packet size is not that big. But then again, it's a problem for HTTP traffic. Anyone heard of TCP slow starts? Good. Remember those 90 milliseconds, and then we will look into TCP slow start. TCP slow start is basically the idea that TCP/IP thinks that not all resources will be that big in size, which means TCP, under the hood, will open multiple connections to a web server, for example, but only if it feels it is required to do so. So what will happen is my TCP connection will be one connection receiving a packet. That packet says to my client and to my server that there's more content coming, so it will double the amount of connections. It will become two. Then after the second one, it will be doubled again. It will go to four, and to eight, and to 16, and so on, up until we actually received all our contents and up until all the limits that are applied on all the devices in between my client and my server. So this means, in theory, if we have a front page, just one file of 256 kilobytes, that we want to travel, transfer from US East Coast to US West Coast, which is 90 milliseconds round trip per TCP packet, we will actually have to do multiple round trips to fetch that one file of 256 kilobytes. And in this case, with the TCP slow start mechanism in there, this will mean that for my 256 kilobytes, I will have to do 10 round trips, which means my 90 milliseconds become 900 milliseconds, which is interesting, which is very interesting if I have multiple files of 256 kilobytes or even 64. You see, it starts taking quite a lot of time to transfer all that content to the client. And the only way to solve this thing, frankly, is to move the content closer to the user. Reduce that 90 milliseconds to something like 10 milliseconds, and it will still take 100 milliseconds to download that 256 kilobyte file, but it's only 100 milliseconds versus almost a second, which is much, much faster. And especially if you're watching a page, you want the perceived load speeds to be as fast as possible, and so by moving the content closer to the user, this will be much faster. Then there's the cost of web load. This is, yeah, discussion is possible on this one, but still, serving static content from your web server costs resources on the web server. Depending on configurations, depending on which web server you are using, and so on. But in general, serving static files costs you CPU. Imagine you are using ASP.NET and you have session state enabled and basically all the defaults, and you are using session state, you are using federated identities with a cookie of 2 kilobytes, and so on. Fetching one static file will mean that IIS will check security on that file, will load that session cookie, it will load the Windows Authentication Foundation cookie, and so on. So a lot of steps on the server are happening just to serve up this stupid static file in CPU. Then serving static files also costs I/O. Again, depending on configuration, depending on tweaking, and so forth. This may not be a problem, it may be a problem. And serving static files is basically just copying files from one stream to another one, copying them from disk to the output stream that goes to the client, right? So why are we doing this? Why are we letting our servers spend CPU and I/O on things that it shouldn't spend CPU and I/O on, because someone else can do it for us? And why are we not just having our web servers do what they are good at, namely rendering dynamic content, doing our application thing, showing data grids, and so on? Why are we not doing that, and why are we serving static files? Another example on cookies. I've seen quite some websites that are using, there's this misconception, or this conception is actually not really a misconception, that session state is bad, right? Session state is bad. So a lot of people still require some sort of session state between request A and request B for the same user. Anyone using ASP.NET MVC? Temp data all the way, right? Problem is, temp data uses session state, so a lot of people are making use of one of the NuGet packages out there that put temp data inside a cookie. Have you looked at that cookie? Even if you don't put a lot of data in there, that cookie will be like 2 kilobytes. which means that if we want to fetch a 1 kilobyte PNG icon from our server, we are transferring 2 kilobytes to the server. The server is decrypting that cookie, reading that cookie, and so on, and sending back that PNG together with that 2 kilobytes again to make sure that cookie is still available on our client. So it's crazy that for 1 kilobyte, we have to transfer that amount of data over the wire, right? So there are some problems on the internet. We have our browsers and the number of concurrent connections. We have speed of light, we have TCP slow start, and serving a web load costs time, CPU, memory, and so on. So there are some problems. Are these bad? Well, no, they are actually what the internet is, and I don't think we can really solve them, except by redesigning the entire internet, but I don't think that's feasible at this moment. Or at least it would be a very costly project and it would end up in 5 years with a bunch of paperwork and nothing that was actually built. So I don't think we can really fix this thing. But do remember, as my good friend Andy Cross on the internet said yesterday, the internet sucks and so does your server. So to solve the fact that the internet sucks and our server sucks, why not look at something else to apply a sort of a workaround on all these things? One workaround may be serving content from a different host name. Serving content from a different host name will mean that our client will have multiple concurrent connections, not only 6 in Chrome, but suddenly 12. 6 to my web server, 6 to my other host. Speed of light. There's not really anything we can do with that one. If you do know, don't tell. Make sure you have a patent registered and then tell, because I think you will get very, very rich if you can beat speed of light in some way. But because we cannot do that, the best way to solve this issue is by moving content closer to the user, reducing those 90 milliseconds to like 10 milliseconds. And again, 90 milliseconds is not bad for one packet, but still, if you have this TCP slow start mechanism there, those 90 milliseconds will add up and will become a much longer time. So move it closer to the user. Another one is the cost of web loads. That was the other problem. And how can we solve that? Well, again, serving off a different host name, which has a different configuration than our server. On our server, probably we will be needing cookies, probably we will be needing a database, and so on and so on. But on the domain that is serving our static content, we don't need all that. So just serve off a cookie-less domain and move all the static content off the server to reduce the CPU and I/O overheads, even though it's minimal depending on the website and the application you are building, but still, it's consuming quite a bit. And a workaround for that is the Azure CDN. So what is the Azure CDN? Because I've been talking about CDN since the beginning of this talk. The Azure CDN is a service which allows you to serve content, well, basically sort of proxy content that is hosted on your storage account or on a cloud service through a separate host name. So that solves already one of the problems that we had, right? We are moving our content to a different host name, and we don't have to do a lot of things to do that. Since our content is on a separate host name, and the CDN is not really interested in cookies and so on, we also have a cookie-less domain, which means we are reducing overhead even further. The CDN has this interesting mechanism using DNS Anycast to basically provide the same host name on different locations around the world with the same IP. And wherever I am in the world, the CDN will make sure that it is serving this content from the node that is in network topology the closest to the user. It doesn't mean if my PC is here and there's a CDN node here that I will hit that CDN node, unless it's on the same network, but maybe another node is more interesting in terms of networking, in terms of networking speed. So if you are using the CDN and you're doing tests and for some reason you are ending up on a node in Paris and not in Amsterdam, may well be because the network speed to that node in Paris for you is faster than the one in Amsterdam. There's a number of locations and you can find them on the Microsoft website. I think there's 29 or something currently. There's a number in US, there's a huge number in Europe, and there's a couple in Asia and Australia. You see there's some blank points on the map, but I'm pretty sure someone at Microsoft has seen that same map and that they are working on that. So there's quite a lot of nodes, and even in Europe, you can get a node that is really close to where the client is. So how does it work? You see this different icon there in Ireland, in Dublin. I have my blob storage account in Ireland. If I'm not using a CDN and I'm on vacation in south of France, I will connect to a website using my tablet and I will go to my node in Dublin. This will probably be 40, 50, maybe 60 milliseconds, depending on network speeds, depending on the size of the village that I'm taking my vacation in. But yeah, it's 40 or 50 milliseconds, and again, 256 kilobytes, this will probably be 700 milliseconds to get that content from that node. If we are using the CDN, and we are using the CDN hostnames that are available, what will happen is that our user will connect to the closest CDN node, which doesn't have that content yet, but the CDN node will fetch that content from our origin. Remember that name, origin? The CDN node will fetch that data from the node that is in Dublin and then cache that data on its local cache, which means if our user does a second request, it will no longer make that round trip to Dublin and make sure that the content is served from this one node. Does this solve everything for every user? Not really, because there's still some overhead in connecting back to Dublin and caching that data on the edge node. But since that's going over very good connections and very good fiber optics, it will be slightly faster than if the user would do this. And every subsequent request will simply go to this one edge node that is available, and our user will be served its content from there. So it is actually faster. Does this mean if I route to Spain through Madrid and the content is on that CDN node, does that mean that the content is on all the CDN nodes around the globe? Well, no. If you are using the CDN, the only nodes that will be used are the nodes that are being used by your users. Which means if you have no one ever using the CDN node in Milan, for example, well, then that node will not contain your content. It's easy as that. So let's quickly create a CDN endpoint. Let's move to a demo. So in the it all starts over again. So here's the thing: I've been doing Azure talks for like 3 years, and back in the days, my first talks, we had this nice portal written in Silverlight, and then at a given moment, this portal came about, which didn't contain all the features. It does contain all the features right now. But it would mean that we would have to switch back between the new portal and the old portal. Anyone seen Build last week? There's a new portal. Luckily for me, the CDN isn't in there yet, so I can use the old new portal to demonstrate all this, but it's crazy. I have to stop doing this. I have to stop doing talks. So in the old new portal, you will find a CDN menu there. And by default, it will be empty, of course. And we can simply create a new CDN endpoint there by picking an app service, CDN, quick create. We pick the subscription where we want to host this, and then we have to select our origin domain. So whenever we want to enable the CDN, we have to specify where the content will be coming from. This can be a blob storage account, or this can be a cloud service. No websites currently, no VMs currently, no custom domains, or no custom origins currently either. Now, on that last note, this morning, and yes, 6 a.m. is very much morning, I got an email from the, anyone know the migratewindowsazureidea.com website? It's basically a user voice forum where you can give hints to the team inside Microsoft on features they should probably be building. I was just telling you guys that there's no support for custom origins, like any website out there proxy through the CDN. This morning, I got, I actually proposed that one on the migratewindowsazureidea.com, and this morning I got an email that it's under review. So perhaps, let's hope. But currently only storage accounts and cloud services. So let's pick a cloud service and create our CDN. And you see this is pretty quick. I have my new CDN endpoints, and if I go in there, I get my endpoint name, I get some options, and so on. For the demo, for the remainder of the demos in this talk, I'm not going to be using this endpoint. Why not? Creating a CDN endpoint is fast in the portal, but propagating all the settings, propagating the fact that this hostname maps to this storage account to all the CDN nodes around the globe takes time. Propagating this domain name through DNS Anycast and so on takes time, so probably between now and 1 hour, this node will be up and running, but it's risky to rely on that during a demo, so I already created some endpoints that are in my portal. So I created one which is based on blob storage, and that's this one. I have a nice CDN endpoint, and as you can see, the URL they are using is pretty ugly. Good news. Through the portal, you can use a custom domain name. You can simply say manage domains and add your custom domain name there. Fantastic, right? Right? Okay. One issue with that is anyone using HTTPS? Why? It's all open. We've seen this week, it's all open. So I would say if you're using the CDN and you want to use a custom domain name, do not use SSL. Why not? Because Microsoft currently does not support adding your custom certificates on the CDN, which means if you have a custom domain name and you enable HTTPS, you will end up with their certificate, which is not valid for the domain name that you are using, and you will get all sorts of crazy SSL errors. So if you do want to use SSL, you will have to use this ugly URL for now. Okay, we have some options there. We can disable our endpoints temporarily. We can enable and disable HTTPS. We can enable and disable query strings, which is also a very interesting thing, which you will see later in the talk during demos. The CDN typically looks at the path of the file that you are requesting to store its cache. Now, if you enable query string caching, it will also take the entire query string into account, which means for every different query string that you are requesting the CDN, it will keep a separate copy on the CDN node, which is quite interesting if you want to do some more dynamic stuff where, depending on the query string, the cache should be different. And if all goes well, I should now have this endpoint. And let's see, HTTP, my endpoint. I think I created a container containing hello world.gif. There we go. So our CDN endpoint works, and this content is now coming from a node that is pretty close to where we are. And I can actually prove that if I copy the host name and do a quick trace. And depending on where I am doing this demo, this will look pretty different. But in here, we can probably see that this will go to Amsterdam. Yes. So you can see that we end up at ams.hcastcdn.net, which is Amsterdam. If you're doing the same talk in Paris, you will probably end up in Paris, in Madrid, or on any of the other nodes that are available. So it's pretty fast. And if we do a ping to that hostname, remember that speed of light thing? Well, if it's only 2 or 3 milliseconds to reach that destination, I think that problem is sort of solved there, right? Okay. Now, where is this content coming from? Well, what I did was I created a storage account to which this CDN endpoint is linked, and inside that storage account, I created a container where I uploaded this hello world.gif. So if I copy this blob URL, you will see it's the exact same content, but this time served directly from blob storage. So it's exactly the same content, and my CDN node is just fetching this content from my blob storage endpoint. On a side note, I was talking latency earlier, just to prove my point in speed of light. There's the Azure Speed Test website, which crashes my browser. There we go. This one actually downloads a JavaScript file from the different storage accounts and CDN endpoints that are available in Windows Azure. It takes a while for it to load, But it's pretty interesting to see the latency of all the endpoints that are available. So for example, for this file that it's downloading, the CDN clearly is faster, even though West Europe, that data center, is also in Amsterdam. So even then, the CDN is much faster there. And I can keep this running for as long as my browser wants to keep it running, but typically you will see that the CDN is faster, and it's the first time that I see this, but West Europe in here is faster than our CDN. It can happen, I guess. It's getting even slower, damn. Why are you here? I'm lying. Okay. So that's a quick CDN endpoint demo. So you simply upload the static content to Blob Storage. Very important, the container has to be either completely public or the blobs inside of it have to be public. So we can do that. Okay, so what did we just do in the demo? Well, our first request went to the CDN. CDN said, okay, I don't have this content in cache, fetch it from Blob Storage or from a cloud service. Second request comes in, the data is on a CDN endpoint and it will simply serve that that data from that same endpoint. Okay, so how do you use this in real life? Because, yeah, not a lot of people want to upload all contents to Blob Storage all the time manually, right? Well, just create one or more public blob containers and upload them manually, or manually using a deployment script somewhere in your CI process, upload them to this public container and make sure that your application is making use of the CDN URLs that are available. So let's create an application with this CDN endpoint. And I've actually created some sort of an application. It's basically the ASP.NET MVC starter template. But in there, I haven't done much changes yet, but I can do them. So in here, I'm serving my scripts and my CSS from my current web server, right? I'm using relative paths there. Well, why not copy my CDN URL and change that to make use of my demo one static container. Let's copy that one and put it in there, put it in there, put it in there, put it in there, and let's run this thing. Okay. And if all goes well, we should have a really ugly website with no CSS and JavaScript. Yes. Why? It's not on the CDN yet. I didn't upload those files to Blob Storage. One thing I can do is do this using one of the tools that are available. Another way I can do this is by doing something like this. I have a different URL which uploads content to the CDN. And how does it look like if I go to my home controller and I go to my synchronize website action methods? What I am doing there is simply connecting to my Blob Storage account. I create a new container if it doesn't exist and set permissions to have all blobs in there as public blobs, right? Next thing I'm doing is finding all the files that I want to upload. In this case, everything inside my contents folder and everything inside my scripts folder. Then for every file, I am looping over it. And based on the extension, I'm determining the content type. Why? Well, by default, Blob Storage will store all your files as an application slash octet stream content type. And while it doesn't really matter, some browsers say application octet stream. I don't know this. I thought you were requesting a PNG image. I'm not rendering this. I don't trust this. So the best thing to do is make sure that your content type is specified on the blobs, because not all browsers like the application octet stream that much. So I know I only have PNG, CSS, and JavaScript files in there, so I'm keeping this one pretty simple. And the next thing I'm doing is uploading my blob. So I'm getting a blob reference. I'm setting the content type on my blob, then uploading it, and then as a last call, setting the properties to make sure that the content type is actually persisted on this blob. And for every file I do that, and then afterwards I say, okay, content has been synchronized. And if we look at our Blob Storage account and we refresh our containers, we now have a demo one static one with our contents and with our scripts in there. So pretty easy, you can add this, you can do this via PowerShell, you can do this using JavaScript even if you want to upload those files to Blob Storage. So let's see if it now works. Let's go back to our front page, and there we are. We have our website running our local machine, and all the static content is being served off the CDN. Awesome. Now, we are developing, and if I go to my bootstrap.js, I think it's the minified one that I'm using. Let's see. Yes, I'm using the minified one. Let's do some poor man's debugging. Everyone does this, I know you are. Let's add an alert in our script. Yay. Refresh. Control F5. No alert. Any pointers? Yeah, of course. We didn't upload it to Blob Storage. So let's do that. Let's upload to Blob Storage. There we go. And let's refresh again. No alerts. Oh dear, the internet is really broken. The reason for this to happen is that the CDN will cache your content for a given amount of time. Now, since I didn't give it an amount of time, it will default to 7 days. So what can I do to see my alert in there? This is, you know this cartoon where two guys are fighting on armchairs? And they say, and the manager says, what are you doing? And then the guy say, deploying or something else. Well, now you can say debugging on the CDN. So you can just do whatever else you want and wait for a week and then debug. And then the next thing you add, debug in another week. Probably a very bad idea, but do remember that the CDN by default caches content for, I think it's 7 days. So that's pretty long. So if we want to fix this, there's something we can do. As you can see, there's also a cache control header I can specify on my blobs. And I can add there how long and where I want this thing to be cached. Of course, if I want it to be cached on the CDN node, it has to be in the public realm there. And I can specify I want to cache it for 1 hour. Does this mean when my first request comes in and the cache is being populated that the cache will be 1 hour for all the CDN nodes around the globe? No. If someone requests your endpoint in Amsterdam at time zero, and at time 59 minutes someone requests the same thing on an endpoint in Switzerland, what you will see is that the content there is being cached for another hour. So worst case, your content is being cached for about 2 hours, even though you specified 1 hour there, depending on the client, depending on the node he's sitting. So this is probably not the best solution, although I would advise to set a cache control header on all your content if you want it to expire faster than those 7 days by default. So how do we handle versioning? How can I make sure that if I want to see this alert, how can I make sure it's actually being displayed? Well, what you can do is this query string thing. If we go back to the portal, we can enable our query string caching there. And if I enable that one and I simply append a query string per version that I'm deploying, I have a different cache per version that I'm deploying. And then I can have some different results. So let's try that. And to have a different version, I do have to make a code change, which I did there, which is awesome. And I also have to add a version number. Now, the version number in the query string can be a date time. Maybe a good one, maybe not. But what I typically use is my assembly version or something like a Git commit hash or something, so that you have something specifying to the CDN that this is for a specific version. So let's add a query string and say our version is our CDN version. And let's add that to all these guys. And if we now run our application, if everything goes well, we should be seeing our alert. There we are. So do keep in mind the CDN is a perfect cache and it will cache for a long time by default. So if you want to bust that cache, make sure that you specify version headers, make sure that you specify expirations on the blobs. So how do you delete content from the CDN? Well, no, just wait for 7 days and it will be gone. You cannot explicitly delete content from the CDN. If it's there, it will be there for the time that is in the cache control header. And if you don't specify that, 7 days. So be careful what you post on the CDN and what you share on the internet that you want to have disappearing. But you will have to think about these things if you are building your application. And the best way to think about that is, by default, set cache control headers that are meaningful. If you know that your CSS is pretty stable and it only changes once a month, make it 1 week, whatever, don't care. If you know it changes with every deployment and you do 3 deployments a day, maybe it's good to cache it just for 1 hour so that your changes are being propagated much faster. Don't set it to 1 minute or to 5 minutes or something like that. So the very low ranges in cache control are a little stupid, I would say. Why are they stupid? Well, since when your user is connecting to the edge, to the CDN node, the CDN node is fetching content from the block container. If it has to do that round trip every minute, for example, if your cache control header is just specifying 1 minute, you're not really improving latency. If you have a very busy website, you are improving latency, but not too much. So it's probably best to just serve it off the web server or directly from blob storage if you want to do that. And use versioning. By default, whatever you do, if you start experimenting with the CDN, use versioning, because otherwise you will have those moments where you scratch your hair and you go like, why is this change not being displayed on my website? Good. So our versioning, it's very simple. It's basically just like output caching in ASP.NET. If you specify that you want to have a different output cache per URL that is being requested, per query string that is being appended to your request, well, it will keep a different cache for every query string. And the CDN does exactly the same thing. So all the URLs here, even though they actually point to the same resource URL, by the fact that the query string is different from the resource URL, it will be 3 different cached versions of the same contents. Now, I see one issue with this. Uploading stuff to blob storage is pretty good if you can do it during your CI process, or if you can do it for content like file downloads. If you are a software company and you have big MSIs or ISOs that you want to ship, put them on the CDN manually, no one will care. But if you are really developing your application, you typically would like that CDN content to propagate from your actual web server. So you can simply deploy your application, not have to think about the CDN, but be assured that the CDN will actually pick up the content. Good thing is, we can do that. We've seen in the portal when we created the CDN endpoint that we can specify the origin for the CDN endpoint. Could be blob storage, could be cloud services. If we select cloud services and we deploy a cloud service, the CDN will fetch content from there. The only sort of annoying thing there is that the CDN will only serve content that is within the /CDN path. So if you have your default.aspx file and you want to cache that on the CDN, you will have to move it to /CDN/default.aspx to be cached. And the same cache control rules apply. So if you are building your application as a cloud service and deploying from that cloud service and using the CDN on top of that one, if your content doesn't expire, it will not show your changes until the content actually expires on the CDN endpoint. So let's use our CDN endpoint, which is based on a cloud service. I have another application here, which is a simple web application, again, boilerplate ASP.NET MVC, and I've made that a cloud application so that I can actually deploy it as a cloud service. My application, if we look at our layout.cshtml, you will see that we are using minification and bundling this time. So in the previous demo, I was using the exact URLs for all the content that I had. In this case, I am making use of minification and bundling. Everyone knows what that is. It's basically ASP.NET making sure that your JavaScript is stripped from additional white space that is not required, your CSS, same thing. It will combine all your CSS and scripts into one file. So basically, I'm just rendering one big pile of CSS here. But I still want to serve this one from the CDN in this case. I'm not going to change my layout in this case. I'm simply going to serve from this URL. Why? Because when I'm developing locally, I just want to make sure that this thing also works and that all the defaults are in there, that I can just push F5 and run my application, make sure that I can actually develop and debug my application. Where am I going to make some changes? Well, in my bundle configuration. So if you've never seen this thing before, what is happening in default ASP.NET boilerplate template is that we are saying that this specific path, /content/CSS, is actually a bundle containing the bootstrap.css and site.css file. That's what we are saying here. If we want to use bundling on top of the CDN, we can also add a CDN URL there. So what I'm doing is specify a second URL, which is prefixed with my full CDN URL, /content/CSS. That's what I'm doing there. How does bundling and minification know what the CDN URL is? Well, by doing two things. First of all, again, I'm versioning content. Do keep this in mind, version your content. By the way, if you are building, if you're using the default bundle, which is in bundling, ASP.NET will do the versioning for you. So it will create a different version of the bundle depending on all the files that are in there. So you don't have to do this. But since I'm not using the, and I'm saying default bundle, there's actually an extension method that says register default bundles. By doing that, you already have that functionality. But since I'm using the full bundle specifications here, I have to pass in versioning if I want to make use of versioning. So what I'm doing here is specifying my CDN URL. I'm saying demo2 static, just to have the same endpoint, but on a different CDN endpoint. And then I will add in my full path to my CSS, to my JavaScript, and so on, and then my version. And I have to specify that I'm using the CDN on my bundle collection. By setting this one, that's actually a funny one, the ASP.NET bundling and minification tools will make sure that if you press F5 and you are in debug mode, that all the content is served from your local machine. If you are in release mode, it will come from the CDN. So it's actually pretty easy to deploy in this way as well. If you deploy a release build, you will always be using the CDN in this case, even though in my layout.cshtml, I didn't change a thing. So let's try this guy. I sort of forgot the URL for it. Let's see, cloud services, there we are. Azure CDN demo, how easy can it be? AzureCDNDemo.cloudapp.net. I deployed this thing up front with all the settings I've just shown you, and I have an issue. No CSS, no images, no whatever. Why is this? Remember that we had to serve from the /CDN URL. And if we look at our bundles, not this one, I'm actually going to close that one to avoid confusion. If we look at our bundles, we are registering them as /bundles/jQuery. To be working correctly, we have to do something like this to make sure that they are served from the CDN URL instead. Now, since if I'm deploying this on my server or in my staging environment, which may be a debug build and not a release build, and I may not want to be using the CDN in those cases, I find that CDN in the URL pretty ugly. Depends on preference, but I do not want to have my CDN bleed through so far in my application that I actually have to hard code CDN URLs. Don't want to do that. So another option we can use is making use of URL rewriting. So what we can do is add some rewrite rules and say that for every URL that matches CDN /demo2static/regular expression, we want to rewrite our URL to that regular expression. So basically what we are doing here is if someone requests /CDN/demo2static, we are just stripping off that part of the URL and making sure that it actually works. That's an interesting thing, because if I would do CDN/bundle/jQuery and so on, my CSS and my JavaScript will live at that URL, but all the images that I'm referencing may or may not, depends on how your CSS is structured, but the images may not be on that path. And your CSS will be loaded, but not your images. So that's an issue. By using this rewrite rule, if I request an image from this specific URL, that image will also be served from the CDN. and it will also be available to the CDN by hitting my website. So let's publish our website. And by the way, I'm using a crazy trick here. Anyone knows? Anyone using cloud services? Okay, a couple. You can use web deploy on cloud services for demo and development purposes. So what I'm doing here is web deploy on cloud services, so I do not have to wait for 15 minutes for my deployment to finish, because otherwise this talk would be very, very, very boring. So we can now use web publish to our cloud service. Do note, if my cloud service restarts, my changes are back to my defaults that I deployed initially, so don't use this in production. But if we now refresh, we should be seeing some contents. There we are. So we are now serving this content from the CDN, but the CDN is initially fetching the content from our web server. So our web server still has to serve static files to the CDN, and afterwards the CDN will make sure it happens. If we open the developer tools, for example, you will see that my scripts and so on are actually being referenced from the CDN there. So I have a different host name. It's cookie-less, so I don't have to add all that in there. And it's versioned, so I can expire it whenever I want, and so on. So I have all the advantages that I had before, but this time I can simply deploy my cloud service, and it will all work magically. All right. There's a couple of other things. I've told you to specify cache control headers and so on in the CDN. And you can actually do that in your web config as well. So you can add a cache control mode and specify that content has to be cached for 1 hour. Of course, this is specific to my entire application, so all my content that will be served will now be cached for 1 hour. Probably not the best idea, because now also my web pages and so on will be cached. So if you want to do this, it's probably best to create a web config in a /cdn/demo2static folder in your application and add this setting there, so only that URL has the caching applied. Another thing I can do, and I actually didn't show you that with when serving content from Blobstorage, is content compression. Why are we serving all our content just in plain text and just a plain image and so on? Why are we not compressing our content? The CDN supports whatever you give it. So if you give the CDN a compressed version of your CSS file and tell the CDN to serve it up as an with an accept header and a content type header of deflate/gzip and so on, the CDN will simply serve that as a zip file. So to make the bandwidth required and the number of TCP packets required to transfer data from my server or from the CDN to the client even smaller, we can make use of compression and make sure that our content is actually compressed, and the browser will simply sort of unzip everything when rendering. So if we add all these things, we will now have our cache in there for 1 hour, and we will have compression in our cache. It's pretty easy to do, and in fact, these settings, I would add them to any application, even if you are not using the CDN. Because it's, well, depending on the load on your server, it may actually help or destroy your server. So some best practices on this thing. Again, the second bullet point there, versioning. Set version strings in the URL, because otherwise you will get yourself into a world of pain because you are waiting for the CDN to refresh if you are developing. Do set cache control headers. If you know this content will not be refreshed within a week, set it for a week. If you know it will not be for 1 hour, but maybe in 2 hours, set it for 1 hour. Set the content type header to make sure that if you are serving an image, that it is actually an image and not an application/octet stream. And set your content encoding as well. It all helps the browser in determining what type of content it is seeing. And do remember, if you are compressing on the origin, the CDN endpoint will also serve compressed content. Okay. Now, what if I told you that dynamic content can also be served on the CDN? Well, you would be pleasantly surprised, I think, well, for a lot of applications. But let's add a disclaimer there first. I'm saying dynamic content, but dynamic content is only sort of semi-dynamic. What I am meaning by dynamic content is content that is generated based on query string parameters or on something that comes from a database and so on. Something that is really rendered on the server, but you still want to keep in cache for quite a while. So anything that is being cached for or that can be cached for more than a couple of minutes. So imagine you are building a sports website and you want to serve up some JSON that contains all the scores of everything that is being shown. What you can do is simply cache that JSON based on the team in the query string and so on for a couple of minutes. Your stats will not be real time, but they will be refreshed in 5 minutes. And if you have a lot of users, they can simply query the CDN, get the content fast, but they get a cached version, which may be 2 minutes old, for example. So what can you do there? You can do charting, you can do images, you can do JSON. If you have a public API, anyone doing web API or something? If you have a public API that doesn't require your user to be authenticated, why not put that API or serve that API through a CDN endpoint? If the content doesn't change that often, for example, every 5 minutes, well, the CDN can perfectly handle that, query your cloud service for the actual API result, but then serve the blob from the CDN afterwards. So let's give you a quick example on that. And since it's morning, I adjusted my demo a little bit. I know I tortured you with TCP slow start and so at the beginning. But for this demo, I created a meme generator, which is actually live if you want to test this at... azurecdndemo.cloudapp.net/meme-generator/index. Now, I don't offer you to select who will be the image of the meme, but I can add a text there. So let's add one and say, when I peel onions, onions cry. You already know who this is going to be, right? Any guesses? It's our dear friend Chuck. So there we go, a meme generator on top of the CDN. If we actually look at this page, you will see IE is playing some crazy things, but you will see in the URL there that I am actually serving this one over the CDN. I simply added the text that I filled out in my query string. So whenever someone wants to serve this content to their users, I'm caching this one for a week, they will simply be served from the CDN. And after a week, it will regenerate it on the server for one more time, but it will still be served through the CDN. So whenever you request this specific URL, and I know it's a long one, so I would probably want to add a bit.ly or something there, but if you are serving this URL to your users, they will simply hit the CDN and not my server, who otherwise has to load an image, make it a graphics buffer, add the text, make sure the text is centered, make sure the font size and so on. So if this website would get popular, and I'm pretty sure it will, since it's Chuck Norris there, if this would get popular, my web server will be doing a lot of image work, and if I simply offload serving that content to the CDN, well, I can reduce the load on my web server. So let's maybe do another one. Count it to infinity. Twice. There we go. New meme, new CDN URL, and so on. And if I open this one, it will not hit my server. So if I open the same URL, it will come from the CDN. And by the way, you can see it's blazingly fast, which may be because of two cases, because I set cache control headers for 1 week on the CDN. But those cache control headers are also maybe not respected by my browser. So that may be another reason. But still, in other browsers, if they are not being crazy, it's still pretty fast. So how am I doing this? Well, pretty simple. Whenever I post data to my meme generator, I have this crazy check on checking if I'm actually debugging or not to make sure that I can actually debug this on my application. Probably not the best way to check this because it's pretty slow, but it works. And then I'm and if I'm not debugging, if I'm on production, I'm simply redirecting to the CDN endpoint. I'm specifying that I want to add some output caching there. Why is this important? Well, because specifying this output cache attribute there and saying that I want to have the output cache on the downstream means that the CDN will actually get a cache control header by this attribute. If you're not a big fan of these guys, you can also add these guys and simply set the cache control headers on your response. So this guy actually does these three things. Setting when we last modified this thing, how long it can be cached, and where it should be cached. Next thing we are doing is loading the image, checking which fonts we have to use to make sure that if we only have one word, the font is bigger, otherwise a little bit smaller. So not too much work, but if this is really a popular website, or if we are doing 20 database calls to serve up some something, or if we are doing, I don't know, World Cup statistics or something, we may not want to do that for every request that's coming in. We may want to cache that on the CDN. So this is serving dynamic content through the CDN. By the way, why does this work on the CDN with this URL? Again, because I added those rewrite rules. So if you want to add this on a /CDN/whatever endpoint to make sure it's being served through the CDN, you will have to add that that webconfig setting there. So I think we've seen quite a lot. I hope it was worth coming here at this time of day, or you all just came early because of traffic. I don't know. But yeah, I hope you've learned something about the CDN, which is why are we using a CDN? It's not a holy grail. Actually, the fact that we have to use a CDN is because the internet and your web server is broken. It's simple as that. But since we cannot change that, it's a good thing to use a CDN. The Azure CDN is on every subscription since last week, I think. And you can use it using Blob containers as the origin or cloud services as the origin. And seeing that email I got this morning, other endpoints will probably come as well. And it's not only for serving static content, it's also good for serving semi-dynamic content, and you can basically do anything there, not only images, not only Chuck Norris memes and so on. You can use it even to serve up your API and serve up JSON and so forth to your users. With that, thank you for being here, and I hope we do get to enjoy a beer together somewhere tomorrow. Thank you, and don't forget to fill out the evals, because this was really early to give a talk. Thank you.